Hey everyone, Chat Cemetery is back. Today is our first three-person episode. It only took us 91 episodes to get to this point, but I am joined today by Drew Deitch and Travis Newton. Travis, this is your first episode, and I am so sorry.
That's okay. I hopefully will be back for something way better. I'm scheduled to do Buick 8 right now, so fingers crossed.
Yeah, hopefully that will be better. I'm only like 60 pages in, so I don't have a good gauge just yet, but... Drew, how are you doing today?
Well, I mean, we're talking about the Mangler 2, so there's a certain bar that can only be reached as far as goodness. But I will say, you know, I was on for the episode on the first Mangler, so I have my, I'm here doing my due diligence. Although I think it's fair to talk about that there is no way that this was conceptualized to be a sequel to the Mangler. It was just it had to have been another script that they slapped the Mangler name onto.
Yeah, I think it was one short rewrite away from being a Mangler thing, because there's only a couple of scenes where they actually say the word Mangler. Otherwise, it could be anything else.
Yeah, I feel like from what I have been able to gather, I haven't watched it just yet, but The Mangler Reborn seems to be more of a sequel than this one. Mm-hmm. And just the fact that there are three Mangler movies, it amazes me what stories get taken from Stephen King and people decide to just run with them for adaptations. You know, there are also three Sometimes They Come Back movies, and one definitely was not supposed to be a Sometimes They Come Back movie at all. It was one called Frozen initially, and then they just totally changed the title to it, and they were like, ah, we're going to make it a Stephen King thing.
This definitely feels like a Lawnmower Man type situation.
Yes.
Where there is...
In more ways than one.
Yeah, I mean, yes, in more ways than one, actually. Because I was waiting the whole movie for there to be the loosest of connections to the first Mangler. Like, oh, you know, even a name recognition. Like, oh, whoever the name of the character Robert Englund played that ran the laundry press or anything. But this is the laziest kind of sequelizing where... And that's just talking about it as a sequel. Judging this movie on its own merits, it's appalling.
Yeah, that is one word for it. I'm willing to bet the movie was called Graduation Day, at least when it was written, because that's the subtitle that appears on screen when you actually watch the mm-hmm. opening credits of the film. This was written and directed by a guy named Michael Hamilton Wright, whose career I'm not terribly familiar with. But I get the sense that he's English, because so much of the structure of this film comes from English boarding schools. It's like so not American.
Yeah, the whole premise was very weird, because you mentioned Graduation Day and it's like it wasn't even Graduation Day.
Nope, more like Field Trip Day, except the main characters are not on the field trip. Everybody else is.
It was like their geology field trip is the big to do at this private academy or whatever. Yeah, I mean, so here's my big kind of overall takeaway with The Mangler 2 is that it fails on almost every conceivable level that you could want a movie like this to fail at. Because first of all, like, there isn't a decent character in the entire bunch.
Mm-mm. No, the main character we get is somebody, I believe, named Joe. I couldn't tell whether it was Jill or Joe through most of the movie, so I went with Joe. But anyway, Jo is the daughter of the head of the Newton Company, which does like surveillance tech. And they're forcing her to go to this stuck-up private school. And Jo's dad has a deal with the headmaster at the private school, Headmaster Bradeen, played by Lance Henriksen. And that deal is to install a whole bunch of cutting-edge surveillance technology in the school. So the school is like fully automated and the headmaster can control a whole lot of stuff from his office. That is the sort of setup. Now, like Drew said, the Mangler washing machine has nothing to do with the rest of this movie. It's something entirely different.
Yeah, I was watching this and I was like, okay, they've modernized it, so it's going to be this tech thing instead. And I want to say for like all but the last 20 minutes, I had no idea what the purpose of the movie was. And it's a bummer, because I feel like Lance Henriksen is someone who is pretty recognizable and possibly the only recognizable person in this for the most part. And
yeah,
he's just mm-hmm. so wasted on the lack of an entire plot.
Like, what is the purpose of the movie is so funny.
There is no purpose.
Yeah, just, that's such a nothing. Great summation of the experience. It's like, what is the purpose of this? It's an existential crisis happens at some point during everyone's viewing of The Mangler 2.
Accurate.
I know for Travis, we were talking about it. I think his existential crisis moment was a woman was going through a bunch of cabinets looking for laundry stuff or something.
Yeah, well, she's alone in like the laundry room. It's one of the teachers at the private school.
Yeah.
She's alone in the laundry room and she's just going through the cabinets above the washer and dryer for like an extended close-up that does nothing. It's not to build tension. It's not to imply any sort of presence. She eventually is killed by, I think, nothing. Like, there's something kills her. I think there's like a blood splatter across the washer and dryer. But what happens to her? I can't even remember.
Well, this was my kind of breaking point with the movie. Because with a movie like this, if you have terrible characters, which all of the characters are just horrific horror movie teen stereotypes, if you have that, that stinks. You have Lance Henriksen, but he, like you said, Deanna, he's being totally wasted. That stinks. At the very least, you'd be like, well, maybe we'll get some fun slasher kills. And in this moment, there is like some kind of like press, some rolling press thing in this laundry room that catches her hair. And I was like, okay, that could be a fun, cool death. But the low budget on The Mangler 2 rears its head at every turn. And in this moment, the most they could do was get a close-up of this press, run a wig through it with a little bit of blood on it.
It wasn't even her hair color either, was it?
Right.
With the quality of the lighting in the movie.
How could you tell?
I couldn't even tell. Yeah, exactly.
But that was the moment where I'm like, oh, man. Because earlier, there's some, like, I don't know, janitor or repairman guy running around. And these wires come out of the wall. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. This is what I, at least at the bare minimum, want from a movie like this. And it, like, picks up some garden shears or something and floats through a hallway towards him. And it just goes through a doorway and we hear like stab, bleh, and that's it. There's not a single good kill in the entire movie. So even by that most minimal of horror movie kind of pleasures, you're not going to get it from The Mangler 2. Never. It's so frustrating.
It's unfortunate that this was not one of those movies where it's so bad it's at least entertaining. This was just all bad.
There are a couple moments that threaten to be entertaining.
I think there's one moment that crosses the threshold of yes, entertaining, well, but it's certainly, you know, it's certainly thanks to Lance Henriksen, but we'll get there.
Entirely. Well, because like I said, all of these characters, they're just awful stereotypes. They're stoners. There's no other way to say this, because this is the way the movie treats him. Just the black guy, and that's his job in mm-hmm. the movie, is to be the black guy. And it's super insulting, and the movie even points to its own ineptitude in that regard when that character is looking at a computer screen and a message comes up saying, like, don't you know, Will, his character's name is Will, like, the black guy doesn't always die first. And I just, that was like a throw my arms up and walk away moment of like, come on. And then it drops a reference to the Weakest Link game show.
The pop cultural references in this movie are just painful. Like I said, all except for one. You know, this is something that we'll have to build
the crowding moment of Mangler 2.
Uh-huh. Yeah, let's at least have a little bit of buildup. The movie made me wait for it. I'm going to make you wait for it. So we haven't talked about the music yet, but the music is something that bears mentioning, because it's one of the worst things about this movie. It is almost entirely breakbeat music. Breakbeat is a subgenre of electronic music that is, you know, defined by a particular drum pattern, usually, you know, fast tempo.
Half the soundtrack is just raving to itself entirely all the time.
I immensely appreciate those sound effects, Travis, because I would not have been able to replicate that myself. And it was one of those things where I heard some of the songs that were playing and I was like, oh no. Oh no. Why?
Yeah, the new metal song during the credits is particularly egregious as well.
Yes.
Well, there's a great moment when Travis messaged me and he's like, oh no, they're playing Dragula by Rob Zombie. And then I watched it. I was like, Travis, they couldn't even get Dragula. This is the ripoff version of Dragula.
No, it's some breakbeat cover version that takes the same lyrics from Rob Zombie's Dragula and just.
No, it's totally different lyrics, but it's the exact same like lyrical structure. I was like, oh my God, this is literally like royalty free Dragula. Like, so I was listening and I'm just like, this is the entire movie. And what's worse, compounded upon this, is that there are so many scenes when this music is happening where it is just characters walking around. No drama is happening. The build up to the climax of it, and that includes this royalty-free Dracula is all I can call it. It is just our lead character, Joe Jill, walking down hallways for like a good 2 or 3 minutes. Like while this entire breakbeat song plays out, nothing occurs. It is total time killer.
Mm-hmm. The movie has a kind of a structural problem with that stuff. Like they actually manage to escape the school like halfway through the movie. And then they're like, but we have to go back. And I'm like, you don't.
Yeah, I think with The Mangler 2, it kind of went wrong from the start because it takes a while to even get into the Mangler part of things. Whereas with the original, it does take a little time, but it doesn't seem to take quite as much time because you see Joe just sort of hacking her way through stuff. Because, of course, there's always some kid in high school who knows how to do all of these crazy things with hacking, and it's never explained, and you get a sense that, okay, because of who her dad is, maybe she knows more about technology than everyone else, but the technology is still very new for the time period, and one, looks very bad now, but two, you're kind of like, okay, I guess we're just gonna not really pay too close attention to it, but they kind of imply that Lance Henriksen's character has been like assaulting some of the girls or something along those lines, and I was very confused because then it doesn't come into play again later.
There's a moment randomly in the third act, Joe and the other, pretty much the only other significant female character in the movie, are having this moment, and she's like revealing this information out of the blue, like unsubstantiated by anything else we've seen in the movie up to this point. It is super random. It's like, what? Why is this suddenly like, and they're just randomly crying in the middle of all of this. If they wanted that to be a plot point, it is 100% not set up at all earlier in the movie. At least I didn't pick up on anything until they had this scene and she starts revealing like, he called me up to his office or something like that. And I'm like, whoa, we're doing this all of a sudden as they're escaping the computer crazy killer school?
I mean, the first act wants you to know that Headmaster Radin is bad, but it doesn't tell you how bad. So yeah, it's a bit of a shocker. Like the movie sort of unprompted reveals this extra wrinkle, and it ultimately makes Lance Henriksen into the sort of big bad of the film. He becomes the embodiment of the Mangler 2.0 virus.
The Mangler 2.0. To your point about everything, kind of looking dated, Deanna, Travis and I have found a particular affinity for certain dated kind of computer tech movies. We've done episodes on Genrevision on stuff like Lawnmower Man and Virtuosity. And if you lean into the style of those things, they can sometimes be pretty fun. But the Mangler 2, first of all, doesn't have the budget or doesn't want to spend its budget in that arena. And two, the tech element of everything, it seems really, really secondary. Like, the movie doesn't feel concentrated thematically or even conceptually around, hey, here's a fun idea. What would be kind of the most fun we could take this premise with? Because mostly the computer's just like locking people in freezers and
yeah,
and stuff like that. It's like that. And we haven't even talked about the most baffling character in the film, the French cafeteria chef.
Is he French? I don't know. He's vaguely European, but somehow
the foreign cafeteria chef.
Some guy. I don't know why the movie chose him to have any sort of significance throughout the rest of the movie. He doesn't like anybody else, I can tell you that much. He can't stand teenagers. He's just around.
And if everyone's on a field trip, why is he still there? You know, there's not just some food that the kids can heat up or something, you know, like prepackaged meals or something. It was very, very strange, like who was left on campus, because from what I could tell, the kids who were left were all prefects.
I think there's six of them. But here, talking in horror movie language, if you want to have this character, fine. He's supposed to be the comic relief. That doesn't work. And two, this guy has to get killed. Like, this is a character that is primed from the second you see him to be like, yeah, this guy's going to have some kind of ironic kitchen death. Please give me
true.
Give me anything, this movie. But the possibly French or undetermined foreign chef not only doesn't get killed in the kitchen in a fun way, he gets locked in a freezer, but then two of the stoner kids break him out. He lives. He escapes and leaves the movie at some point. And it's just like, okay, bye.
Yeah. It's clear that as we sort of get into the third act of the movie, that the movie's been holding off on spending much money because it needed two things. Number one, it needed the chef character to survive so he could fly away in a helicopter. So they had to rent the helicopter for the day. You know, movies don't really rent helicopters much anymore. They just, you know, will have the helicopter be CGI. Anyway, the other thing that they needed that was really expensive was they had to suspend Lance Henriksen from the ceiling. Cha-ching.
I imagine Lance Henriksen was, I pray he was the highest paid cast member.
I would hope so.
But yes, there is this kind of central hub area, the main desktop computer that that holds the entire school system. And we've seen it a couple times. And then once everything goes crazy and Lance Henriksen is wired in by the Mangler virus to be his real world avatar, we return to this hub area and he comes swooping down out of the ceiling.
Like a marionette.
Yeah.
And I should have said this earlier, but talking about all these pop culture references and these bad teenage characters, I have to believe that the writer, whose name Travis was, you know, good enough to mention, I do not have that information in front of me.
Michael Hamilton Wright.
Michael Hamilton Wright. Michael Hamilton Wright had to have at least been 30 years old or probably older, because all of the dialogue in this, it's like, this is not how teenagers talk. This isn't how human beings talk. And then in this final moment, well, not the final moment, but in this climactic moment when Lance Henriksen descends from the computer heavens, we get some dialogue that very nearly, almost, and I mean barely almost, makes the movie worth it.
Yeah, I got a good laugh out of it. So there is a conversation between Lance Henriksen's character as the Mangler now and Joe, and they're talking about what the Mangler wants. Basically, it wants to get out of the school. It's trapped in there. Not only does it want to get out onto the internet and infect the entire world, but it also wants to start having human babies, you know. And Henriksen thinks that Joe is going to be the woman to start that off for him for some reason. And Joe talks about, was like, well, there is something I wanted to do, or something to some such effect. And he looks straight at her and goes, tell me what you want, what you really, really want.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Oh. He wants to zig a zig. Ah, apparently.
If you want to be her lover, you do have to get with her friends. But he's killed all her friends at this point.
I was going to say, they're all dead. Except for, is the bodyguard dead? The hunky Richard Gere looking guy?
Who knows? Nobody can know with a movie like this.
True.
Yes, this moment, like I say, is almost saves the film from just the level of stupidity in the screenwriter being like, I'm going to write that line. And it's I think it's gonna be funny and dark and twisted. And I'm going to make Lance Henriksen, storied genre character actor, as our climactic villain, quote the Spice Girls. I mean, there's a level of brazenness to that I have to respect.
Yeah, it's a great line. It's the only good line in the movie, I think. And yes. I'm glad I saw that, but I think, well, actually, I don't know. If I had seen it sort of out of context without the rest of the movie, I don't know if I would have laughed as hard, because I laughed pretty darn hard at it.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's time for this mangler to get mangled. So turns out Joe has this obsession with fractals. Mandelbrot patterns.
Yes.
And so she designs this fractal equation that always, you know, this ever repeating equation that is designed basically to freeze computers. So she gives that to him, and the mangler dies, and the crisis is averted, and they all fly away in a helicopter. Oh, and Joe's dad loves her now.
Yes.
Just suddenly. I do want to, you mentioned the Mandelbrot thing, and I had flashbacks to when Travis and I watched this movie called Wish Upon. And in Wish Upon, which was definitely written by like a 40-year-old man, he's writing these teenage characters. And one of the story points, I don't even think you'll remember this, Travis, is that one of the connections that's made between the two lead characters as a romantic connection is that they're both into multiverses as a concept. This is a thing that they bond on. It's like, what? This, nobody has ever, whoa, man, you're really into multiverses too? And it feels the same way with Joe Jill, where she, like, whoever this person that wrote this decided, like, oh, Mandelbrot thing. Yeah, that's something I'm really into. So I'm going to make her really into it. And then it's going to be this big plot point about, okay, it's just so bad. But what's really important is that for no discernible reason, Joe Jill's father loves her. Like, there's been this big cathartic. He just comes running out of it. I thought it was going to be like an act. Like, oh, he's been infected by the Mangler virus and people are being taken over now. And this is its escape out into whatever. I don't know with this movie. But
that would have been more interesting.
They spent whatever pittance they had for a budget. They definitely spent it on the helicopter rental instead of anything else in this movie.
Another fun thing. There is a doofy talking computerized face.
Yes.
That the Mangler has about halfway through, that's very Lawnmower Man, and I appreciated that as much as one can appreciate things like that.
Yeah, and I know when I was making this list, I took the Lawnmower Man movie off because I knew about like the legal battle between Stephen King and the movie and getting his name taken off of it. But with this, I just put it on here because I was like, you know what? I'm definitely watching the first Mangler movie, and it seems like the third one is more accessible than this one. So I was like, all right, I'll try to do this one. And if it was going to be way too much of a hassle for all of us to watch it, I was like, you know, maybe it's not totally necessary. And I certainly feel that way after having watched it now. Not a totally necessary movie at all whatsoever. Do not feel bad if you have never seen this and never see it.
Well, we were talking about this before we started recording, but I want to put it on record. Is this the worst movie you've covered for Chat Cemetery?
I gave it a 1 star, so it has to be pretty darn close. There might have been one thing that I gave a half star to, but I want to say pretty much everything has been 2 stars and above with a few exceptions. There might have been one of the Sometimes They Come Back movies that I did as 1.5 stars. Like I was telling you guys, what I need to do is I need to go through my letterbox and put all of the Stephen King movies in a list. This way I can sort by ratings and then I'll be like, oh yes, now I remember how bad these things were.
I mean, yeah.
But other things have been like fun bad. This was just, I don't care at all. Like you guys said, there was 1 or 2 laughs, maybe. It wasn't Maximum Overdrive bad.
No, I mean, if something is entertaining, I think regardless of kind of the context, it's entertaining and you're getting a positive experience out of it. And when we did our episode on The Mangler, I think I took that stance like, look, I have fun watching this movie. Is it like scary? No, but it's got Ted Levine and an evil refrigerator at one point.
And Robert Englund.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's money in that movie, thankfully, especially comparatively to The Mangler 2. But this was kind of the worst experience you can have with a movie like this, where I think it was like 30 minutes in, and I told Travis, it's like, it feels like it's been double that length. Like, I've been watching this for an hour, and it has no signs of stopping, and there's nothing. There's so little.
The rowers keep on rowing.
That's right. Right. There's so little to not only recommend, but even highlight in the movie.
Yeah, it's a waste of time. Deanna said it was a very not necessary movie, which is, it's pretty much saying, yeah, it's a waste of time.
Well, I will, if nothing else from this episode, I will take away Deanna, you going, what is the purpose of this? is the greatest realization you could have while watching The Mangler 2 : Graduation Day is, what is the purpose of this? And I think the answer we've come to is, there is no purpose.
On my Letterboxd review, I literally wrote, does not compute, and that was it.
That's good.
That's about it.
Good poll quote.
I think my review, if I had to write one out, would say, I said I got the funk and the funk is in your face.
Oh, gosh. That's
just one of the vocal samples from the awful breakbeat cues.
I think my poll quote be, I do not want this. I do not really, really want this. So, yeah, Mangler 2. But, yes, I mean, as always, the conversation about the Mangler 2 was leaps and bounds more enjoyable than the movie.
And thankfully, mercifully shorter.
Yeah. I knew this was going to be a short episode by the time I got like 5 minutes in. I was like, oh boy. Okay. I was like, I owe these guys an apology.
It's okay.
But thank you both for coming on to talk about The Mangler 2. I know you will both be back on for separate episodes. Maybe we'll get you on together for another episode down the line. Travis, if you want to risk The Mangler Reborn, I think Drew might be signed up for that one as well, but we'll just wait and see.
Yeah, that's a tentative pass.
Fair.
Well, I mean, I did the first one. I've seen the second one. My completest nature is like, I'm gonna have to watch The Mangler Reborn.
In for a penny, Drew.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, well, I look forward to my next conversations with both of you.
Thank you, Deanna. Pleasure to be on.
Same here.
All right, that does it for this episode of Chat Cemetery. You can support the podcast on Patreon for $1 a month. You'll get a thank you on the show. For $2 a month, I will send you a Chat Cemetery sticker. And if you want to follow us on social media, you can do so at Chat Cemetery on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You could also rate and review the show. That's a huge help. And as always, thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.